Hello and welcome to Into the Wild, the podcast that brings you animal facts, wildlife updates and nature stories from the professionals to you. On this week's episode, I spoke with presenter and ornithologist Dan Rouse. Dan's knowledge and expertise in garden wildlife started from a young age at home in the garden with her father. Setting up the first nest box, feeding station and bird bath, it was how garden wildlife was first introduced to her. Skip forward 20 years later and Dan's same garden is now a superb and well-constructed haven for wildlife. With 15 feeding stations and numerous nest boxes, there's a huge variety of wild visitors only 15 foot from the house. Dan gives us some great advice on how to get going with inviting wildlife into our gardens. But it's not only the how that's important, but also the why. Green spaces are disappearing with more and more houses being built, and on this show, we explore why it's more important than ever to give something back to the animals that need it. Thanks so much for tuning in and enjoy the show. Hi Dan, thanks so much for joining me on an episode of Into the Wild. How are you doing? How's your day been?
Hello, it's good, thank you. It's nice and quiet. Well, I say quiet, it's noisy with birds, but it's a fairly relaxed type day.
Yeah, like I said, it sounds idyllic in the background. You've got, how many nests did you say you've got in your, is this in your garden?
Yeah, I've got to run through like the checklist. There's 4 house sparrow nests in the holly and hawthorn. There's a blackbird in the ivy, there's a blue tit in the nest box, and then there's raven, wood pigeon and a magpie in the 2 sycamore trees. So it's all gore.
It's like Noah's Ark has kicked off in your garden for birds. That's what's happened.
I know, I'm waiting for something like a house martin. I've tried house martin, the little cups, they just don't seem to work for me. I can't get them here.
You've got every other bird species apart from that.
Yeah. Everything else that you could possibly want, and it's the one that I can't get is the one that I want.
It's always a way. You know what nature's like, it never goes our way. That's the plan.
No.
Well, thanks so much for joining me. For the listeners, do you want to just say a bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm Dan Rouse. I'm a TV presenter on Welsh TV on S4C. Then I write books for DK Publishing about attracting birds to gardens. And basically, I'm a huge advocate for garden wildlife and have a huge passion for birds.
Wonderful. And that's what I'm really excited to talk to you about today, is garden wildlife, because I think so many people share that, but I think a lot of people as well don't realise they know they share that passion as well. I think it's only when it starts happening to them, when they start seeing what's in their garden, it really starts to come out. So I'm really excited to chat about that today. Before we go on to that, the first question I want to ask you is something I ask on this episode all the time to all the guests I have, but when did your interest in wildlife and nature begin for you?
Oh, ages ago. It feels like decades now. it all sort of kicked off when I was 4, that we spent a lot of time in caravan holidays and out the garden playing. And then one day, me and my dad built a nest box out of scrap wood. It's still up. It doesn't look very good anymore. It's had a lot of refurbishments to it. It's now a feeding box because the front has fallen off. But from that, we built our own bird bath using a tyre, and then we had different plants, and then from there, it seems like every year I add something to the garden. Because I think we're up to about 15 feeders now. I've got 3 bird baths. We've got every corner imaginable filled with potted plants and different wildflowers.
Did you say 15 bird feeders?
Yes, so I've got a feeding station with 4 on it. The apple tree currently has 6 feeders. I've got feeders attached to the fences and to the walls. Sorry, as the blackbirds go in. Then there's some on the house as well. It's just trying to make sure that they all have a space. So it tends to be the starlings and the sparrows that will take over. So it's spacing them out so everyone gets a turn. Everyone's welcome.
Have you got enough time to feed yourself?
No. A lot of my money goes on birds.
15 birdies, that's amazing. And I love how you said, I've got to make sure everyone gets something. That's such a nice thing to say.
That's very me, yeah. Sort of, everyone's okay, everyone's catered for, everyone has something to eat. And it's good. Well, I was like, have you fed yourself today? No. No, the birds are fed.
Like, making sure all the bird seeds outside while you're inside with some butter and one bit of bread. That's all you need.
I might as well eat bird feed at this rate.
I mean, you'd get more from it. Yeah, absolutely.
Considering so, what I put out, the different mixtures, and I don't buy ready-made bags. I sort of make my own blend. So there's bins in the shed. It's just lined up. So it's like, we'll have a scoop of this today, a scoop of that. Oh, they didn't quite like this. So we'll mix this up with that. It's literally like feeding toddlers.
You're making cocktails for birds. This is incredible. I love it.
It works.
So you said it happened for you from a young age. Was there anyone, when as you were growing up, that kind of influenced you a lot with nature and wildlife?
There's always been, you always get the classic ones of TV presenters, that type of thing. There's a he's a scientist ornithologist called Dr. Carl Jones, so he's from the same town as I am. But the amount he's done for birds, he's saved numerous species from extinction. And that's sort of what I wanted to do. I wanted to be someone who could do practical work but also use a voice to say, this is what you can do. You don't need to do all this fancy stuff. Just something basic is what you can do. Try to be as inclusive as possible for adults, for children, for those with additional needs. Trying to make everything as inclusive, because nature is inclusive. So trying to make it free and fun and upcycling, recycling, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's great. That's really cool. That's a lovely way to put it, that nature is very inclusive to everyone. It doesn't really hold its boundaries, really. It's kind of what we make from it. So you said you specialise in garden wildlife. How did that... I mean, you mentioned with your dad building the bird nest box, but how did you become to specialise in garden wildlife specifically?
I've suffered with a lot of... I've got a billion and one allergies, so depending on where we go, I will be allergic to something, or I will have a reaction.
Sorry, not nice to laugh at that, but that was just the way you said it.
You might have laughed at it, everyone else laughed at it. But it's somewhere that, when we were growing up, we always went on holidays in caravans. We never had that sort of money to go abroad. We never really wanted to go abroad. We're a very tight-knit family, the three of us. So it was always doing stuff in the garden. And then it just came into like a passion project that all three of us could work on something. So my dad would draw up the blueprints of what to do. I would build it and we'd put it in the garden. But even now, it's watching the wildlife. Like, dad will come in and say like, oh, we've had this in the garden. Or this bird's on the feeders. And it's something that it all sort of interacts with each other, that we can all say something, pick on something, and just watch them together. So it's quite nice.
Yeah, that is really nice. Yeah, it's something, like you said, for everyone, and it kind of draws people in. What do you love about the wildlife you can find in back gardens? Is it the type of animals that you can find? Obviously, you're a big fan of birds, as you said. But is there any other garden wildlife that you really enjoy to find?
For me, I like the nocturnal stuff. It's something that you don't experience at all until you come out in the evening, or you come out at night, or even, it's only that I've been putting cameras out at night that you realise just how much goes on in your garden when you are not there.
Yeah.
So, like, hedgehogs coming in are always adorable. The bats that come out from the shed is really nice. But I think one of my favourite ones, obviously I have to promote birds and my love for birds, is it's called Knockmiggin, so it's nocturnal migration. So I just come out in the garden with a speaker and a fawn, and just lay down in the dark. And the amount of birds you hear travelling during the night, like, we had a group of common scoter go over at like 2 o'clock in the morning, all travelling through the night.
Wow.
It's just that it's a different world.
Yeah. When you say travelling, and you said migratory, are these animals literally passing just the once, maybe, past this area to get somewhere?
Yeah, so things like moorhens, water owls, they all travel during the night. So it's something bizarre that you can lay there, perfect silence, there's no cars, there's nothing, and you can just hear all these bird calls travelling to and from the estuary near to where we live.
Well, you don't really think about hearing that at night. That's a really good point. Yeah, you kind of think birds are dawn and kind of dusk and maybe a bit throughout the day, but you certainly don't think of it as a nocturnal thing.
No, I think I like the night. It's very tranquil, it's very sort of relaxing, but it's just, it's a whole other world where you get bats, and the amount of moths you get that are so colourful, but you don't really see them or appreciate what they're like.
Yeah.
Until you actually see, like, things like a brimstone moth. The colour on it is so bright, but you don't see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I guess it's kind of, we've got those basic nocturnal, I say basic, but I guess a better word for it is mainstream nocturnal animals that we know of, like the bats and maybe hedgehogs and badgers and stuff like that. But we don't really think about all these other, like, birds and moths and other insects that really do thrive at the night time. I guess we're also attracting them within our gardens, and it's important to do that as well as the other animals we actually see.
Yeah, it's things like planting. A lot of people plant for pollinators, whereas moths do a huge amount of pollinating and transferring of seeds and stuff during the night. So a lot of plants that are good for pollinators aren't necessarily brilliant for nocturnal ones because they close during the night.
That's interesting, yeah.
So it's like picking like a buffet of, you've got to have some that open early in the year, some later in the year, you've got to have some that open during the day, some open during the night. It's a lot of, it's just bizarre that there's so much to learn than what you first imagined, because I just thought, oh, we'll plant some wildflowers and that'll be it.
Yeah.
When you get really into it, there's so much stuff you can do. I mean, I've spent so much money on plants.
That does not surprise me.
No, they're inside. They're not helping pollinators inside, but they're now inside.
I've just recently myself started to, in our little London, you know, kind of 7 foot by 7 foot concrete garden, I've got trays of wildflower as seedlings at the moment, already just to put into our little bed that we've made. But it can take quite a long time. You think sometimes, you know, normal plants, they'll grow in a couple of months. But you think wildflowers sometimes need a whole year to spruce up as well, don't they, to really get going.
Yeah, and they just keep coming back then. So it doesn't really, that's what I mean about nature being inclusive. You don't need a huge garden. You don't need acres. Like a patio with some potted plants would be great for bees and moths, that type of thing. It's sort of something that we can all do without, you don't need a lot of money for it. You don't need a lot of space. You can literally just have like a balcony and you can still attract things.
Absolutely, yeah. Like you said, it's inclusive for everyone, and it's making it available everywhere, isn't it, for the insects and birds, really. It's like, no matter where you live, if we can create these little hubs of nature, like whether it's on a window box or whether it's a, you know, a 2-acre garden, it doesn't matter. If we're making it accessible for nature as well, then nature will thrive pretty much anywhere. You were talking about the things that people can do. What kind of things can people do to attract wildlife into their gardens?
I think the basic things are the same things that we all need as humans. You need food, water, shelter, and somewhere that's safe. So for me, I always have at least one bird feeder filled up full, so that there's always somewhere for food. And then I've got a mammal box, which is just a plastic container that's got a little hole in the side for hedgehogs, for mice and voles, for them to come in, so that they have that security, they have that safe zone. Plants are always really good. It doesn't matter which ones necessarily. Pollinating ones are probably better.
Yeah.
And then either a bird bath standing up, because that will cut out the risk of cats and stuff if you have cats nearby.
Yeah.
But one on the ground, but I think people forget, if you're putting it on the ground, to pop some stones into it so that if you get a little hedgehog, it can climb back out.
Yeah.
There's so much things online that you see that mice and stuff have drowned in them. Just pop some little stones inside or some marbles.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, so these ways of attracting wildlife in, if we're putting food out there, if we're putting shelters and stuff like this, what kind of benefits does this actually have for nature itself? Is it just providing a habitat, or is it doing more for nature?
There's a lot of things that are now almost dependent on humans. Something like starlings, for example, they used to be everywhere. The numbers used to be massive, but since the 70s, they've decreased by about 60% or 70%. Mm. We just don't get that many of them anymore. So it's a lot of it is allowing nature to come back into the areas they naturally would be, because yeah. we've taken it over with concrete. We've taken it over by reducing parks, that type of thing. Mm. So it's almost giving up our gardens or parts of our gardens and donating it back to nature so that they can use it as well.
Yeah. And what would you say to
people? That's what it is for me.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And what would you say to people? I know some people I've spoken to in the past, when we talk about attracting wildlife into our garden, some people get a bit, I'm not sure what the right word is here, let me put nervous or apprehensive to attract certain species yeah. into their garden, whether it can be from allergic to bee stings, or it can be like, I don't want mice being in my garden, I don't want certain birds ruining my plant beds and stuff like that. How do we convince these people to allow wildlife into their garden?
I think most of it is certain animals are sort of taboo. So rats are, you don't want rats in the garden. Mm. Whereas you can take measures. We have never had a rat in the garden. I've got 15 feeders and we have never had a rat.
Wow.
And with us, we fill up the feeders with how much the birds use.
Yeah.
So they used to only eat maybe half a feeder. So we'd only put out half a feeder.
Mm.
Now that they clean them up, it's putting out as much as they want, but you've got to allow things like pigeons, because they will clean the floor for you. A lot
yeah.
of people don't want pigeons, whereas they're cleaning up the ground, they're picking up that waste.
Yeah.
And you've got, with your feeders, it depends on what species you want as well. So different feeders attract different species, different foods attract different species. So for me, I wanted more blue tits because we put up a new nest box. So it's putting out a suet block.
Mm.
We had suet logs and we had fat balls, which is more for the climbing species, like blue tits, coal tits, woodpeckers. So it's just researching what you'd like to attract. But a lot of it is you might have to compromise and have some species you don't want.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
If that's the case, that's why I've got the mammal box. The mammal box is near the feeders and away from the house.
Yeah.
So you're still going to get them in your garden, but you can sort of invite them to a certain area away from your stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess it's really planning where you're putting stuff, like you said, in your garden. I remember my nan giving me a tip. This is such a random thing that I've just thought of. My nan said this, and she's never put slug pellets down or anything like that. Instead, what she did was put, you know, old cuttings of veg and stuff in an area of the garden she doesn't mind slugs and that going. So that would attract a
yeah.
lot of slugs and snails and other insects over to that area rather than over to her lovely plant bed on the other side.
Yeah.
So I guess it's the same thing.
Sacrificial plants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I guess that's the same what you've just said there with other animals such as rodents and stuff and squirrels. It's like, you know, just be wary of where you're putting things and where you don't want certain animals going, I guess.
Yeah, it's the same as if you're struggling with vegetables, if you're trying to grow vegetables and you're struggling with slugs, you can attract hedgehogs that naturally eat slugs.
Mm.
Likewise, toads and amphibians also eat slugs.
Yeah.
So if you put a pond nearby to your veg, not only will it give some sort of water or sort of filtration to your plants, you've also got creatures that will do a lot of the cleanup for you. So nature's brilliant.
Mm.
When
yeah.
you can use it. It's sort of like a mutual thing. We can do a lot to help nature, but it's like natural pest control for a lot of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is like that, isn't it? Because, I mean, like we see, you go for a walk and you see nature working fine 9 times out of 10 on its own in some areas. So it's getting
yeah.
it right. We don't have to be as controlling as we think we do sometimes.
Yeah, it's. I don't get it. A lot of it is humans like things to be their way. So... have to control what is happening in their garden, whereas nature's fine on its own. It does its own thing. I just put the food out and put up a nest box and just let them crack on. They seem to know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that's some of the problem sometimes? Do you think people have a very idyllic way of how they want their garden to work with nature? And like you said, a lot of the time that plan that someone has is not going to happen. You've got to let nature work the way it's going to work. Do you think that's half of the problem or battle?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people's, it sounds really cliche, but patience is the best thing you can do for nature.
Mm.
So I've been working on this garden since I was 4 years old. So
yeah.
when people see the garden now and people film in the garden now and you've got all these birds breeding and singing, it's taken us 20 years to get to this point.
Yeah.
So just bunging out a feeder overnight and expecting hordes of sparrows the next morning doesn't work. I don't mean to bash anyone, but I get a lot of these questions of, I've had a feeder out for a week and I'm not getting anything to it. I just will put out another feeder, change up what birds you've seen in your garden, change up your feed, put out higher calorie food that is more appealing, like suet pellets, dried mealworms, peanuts. They're more appealing and visually appealing to birds than oats and the $2.99 bags you buy from like Home Bargains.
Yes, yeah.
Putting up the more appealing things and then reducing that number and putting up the more nutritious things like oats, sunflower hearts, sunflower seeds. But it's all just patience.
Yeah, as you said, or you could do the Dan Rouse effect and put 15 out and see what happens.
Yeah, go full ham, cover the garden in feeders and hope for the best. That's typically my way.
I think you can tell that in my head I'm still like, 15 feet. I love it. I absolutely love it.
I know. I've been told to stop. I've been told just to maybe just work it out. I built another feeding station. I'm awful when it comes to, I can't walk past a skip. If there's a skip on someone's driveway, I always feel the need to have like a little peek inside, and someone was chucking out a swing set and you just instantly look at it going, I could weld that together, that's another feeding station. So I built it, but it's not up yet. It's to one side as I work out how to get away with putting another one up without anybody noticing.
Do you think, this is a question I wasn't planning on asking, but I love the way we've gone down this route. When do you think, do you think this is something now that you just constantly want to work on? Do you like the moving forward with it? Do you like the creativity of trying to figure out ways to get new animals in your garden and stuff like that? Do you think you will get to a point where you go, this is it? Or do you think it's just going to be, you know, in some senses, forever trying to create new ways to do it?
I love education, I love learning. So I love learning languages, learning new terms, talking to people, the amount of things you can learn from just other people.
Yeah.
So for me, there's always something I can do. There's always, we've put in a compost heap now. I didn't have one because I thought, it's not going to work because I don't want to be wasting too much food that we're putting it into a compost heap.
Mm.
But doing the research into it, we've got slow worms and stuff now, which I never thought of having before, because I thought I don't want to put in a compost heap because I don't like wasting food. But when you look at it and you can put in grass trimmings, you can put in bits of trees, cuttings of the little bits of vegetables, and it's something that every day is something new, but I'm also a huge sufferer of the too much gene. So I always go overboard with what I do. It should be something that a lot of people can have. And it's just, the too much gene is, you sort of think, maybe I should stop. And it's, maybe that type of feeder might work. It's just,
every time you feel like you should stop, you walk past one more skip and then you're like, just one more peek.
I know, someone was chucking out a bird bath, so I had to take it and have another one. I do ask people if I can take it first. A lot of the time they just look at you like, yeah, okay. It's like, ooh, a dustbin, could I have that?
And they're like, okay, yes.
Yeah, this is great for potato growing.
I love it. I really like the creativity of it. So we've spoken about like the ways to get animals in and the importance of it. And we did touch on obviously birds are a favourite of you, for you in your garden. But I've got the question written down here to ask you, what is your favourite animal to have in your garden? Do you have an absolute favourite that you'd like to see?
Oh, I love the coal tits. They're probably my favourite. When you see them come in, they're always a little bit anxious. They sort of sit on the outside. They dive into the feeder, grab a peanut and just scarper. They're just out of there. Sort of watch them from the trees edging their way into the holly and then sort of edging closer and then just diving, going for it, grabbing a peanut and running off. I think it's so entertaining to watch.
Yeah. And are these is the coal tits a regular in your garden? Are these quite common in your garden now?
We've got two. Well, I think there's two. One is slightly heavier built than the other, so I'm pretty sure there's two. But I don't know where they come from or where they breed or anything. But
yeah.
I think they're so entertaining. I could sit here for hours and watch them. And the starlings. I do love watching the starlings having a squabble with each other over nothing.
And what about when you're out and about walking, if you go, especially now when you get your hours of exercise outdoors, our government allocated exercise, what kind of animals do you like to see when you're out and about?
I still love listening to birds, but I think outside of the garden I do pay a bit more attention to other wildlife. In the garden, it's sort of, I like to see how things are doing. I like to check up that things are okay. The starlings fledged yesterday. Doing a live show, and you just watch them jump out of the windows. They breed inside next door's windows, and it was just, oh, I hope they're okay. Trying to talk on there, going, oh, come on, just jump out, you'll be fine, don't worry. But no, it's things like butterflies. I'm not brilliant at identifying them, so it's become more of a project to start learning some more butterflies when I'm out and about.
That's nice.
I like to, pay attention to what I know, but also sort of improve on some more skills and some more identifying when I'm outside of here.
Absolutely, I was going to say, you said you got that thirst for education. I guess if you, like you said, you can't tell the difference between some butterflies, now it's your mission to try and do so.
It will irritate me to the point of tears until I work out how to tell them apart. I will sit there for hours and watch them until I know which one is which.
We need people like you, Dan. We need people like you. Otherwise, we will not know.
That's why we can tell. It's not great on nature reserves.
Yeah. That's why we know the difference now, is because someday, or back years ago, someone made that call to do that. And now we can tell the difference.
Yeah.
My last question to you, and this is something, again, I ask to all my guests that I have on these shows, is if you could pass on one bit of advice to everyone regarding the natural world, what would you pass on?
Something small is never small enough, or something like that. I think a lot of people think bigger is better and want to put out so much, but something small, even if you just put a window feeder onto your shed, that's still a step forward. A lot of people think if they're not doing the whole hog, they're not doing it correctly, but you can't do anything wrong. So with nature, nothing is wrong.
Yeah.
So if you're putting out one feeder, you're still contributing. If you're putting out a potted plant of lavender, you're still contributing.
Yeah.
That type of thing. It's never, you're never not doing enough. You're always doing something small. It's always sort of welcome with nature.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's a really nice way of looking at it. And I think a lot of people, I think that knowing that would put a lot of people at ease as well, because I think there is that pressure in the last couple of years to save and do everything. And just knowing that doing one little thing can really help.
If we had something like a million people putting out a potted plant, the amount of land that would cover and the amount of plants and pollinators you'd be benefiting is the same as someone transforming their garden into a wildflower meadow.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of, nature isn't, obviously I always say nature's inclusive, but it can be very isolated. But I think now with lockdown, we're all sharing our stories of our gardens, and you realise just how much people are doing and how much there is, like, a nature community and a garden wildlife community.
Yeah, that's been so clear, and I totally agree with that. In the last couple of weeks, the amount of people I've seen and now networked with on Twitter, and the amount of people just filming their garden wildlife and sharing it and sharing tips, it's been incredible to see how many people are out there.
Now, I've gotten excited over someone else's garden when they share something like, oh, we finally had a hedgehog, we've not had one for 3 years. I get excited for that person.
Yeah,
even though it's not my garden. You sort of think, oh, you've tried so hard, like, you've done your bit and now the hedgehogs are coming, that type of thing.
Yeah.
That it is a very supporting network.
Yes.
That everyone's welcome in it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very true, and that's been very evident from what I've seen as well. Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. So what's next for you? I guess it's very hard to tell at the moment with everything going on, but what have you got planned in, or what do you want to be doing in the next couple of weeks?
So for me, I'll still be doing my regular projects. So I do my monthly roundup. So every month I sort of show all the different cameras what's happened in the garden. So it's doing more then. But I really want to try making some more treats for the birds. I've made sort of fat balls before, but they're mainly just suet. So my next plan is trying to think of a good recipe for suet blocks.
Nice.
This is, again, I like that we've come full circle for you.
I know, a lot of people have got ambitions for learning the language. Mine is, I want to make Stuart blogs. Yeah.
We've come full circle for feeder number 16.
Yeah, I do have a Stuart block feeder, so I think I might mould it based on that shape, because I don't think I will be allowed to put up my new feeding station. It's been a bit difficult to... We do cut the grass. I know a lot of people want the normal thing, but for us it's quite not thing. We only cut maybe half the grass.
Yeah.
That's just because it's easier, and obviously we've got a cat, so I like the birds to know where he is.
Absolutely, that's true.
Yeah, he's got two bells on him, and he is trained not to catch birds. If he catch a bird, then he's not allowed out. And we feed him the same time as feeding the birds. So, he's 2 years old now and he's never caught a bird.
Well, that's good going.
He's very sort of, he's not bright at all. So, I think that helps.
Especially in your garden, 2 years, that's good going.
Yeah, the amount of birds we get. But the birds don't care at all. The blue tits are climbing on him, pulling like the dead bits of fur off him as he's walking around the garden.
No way, seriously?
Yeah, well, I've watched them do it to horses and stuff. I didn't think they would do it to a cat while he sleeps. He is white, so he's very obvious the spot in the garden.
So he would just be laying down in the garden and the different types of tits will just come down and take the hair off of him?
Yeah, so I brush him. I used to brush him every day, but since I watched them doing that, I just thought, well, what's the point? I might as well just let the blue tits do
that's
it.
That's amazing. I've never heard of... That's like an episode of Tom and Jerry.
I know. I've watched blue tits do it to horses on nature reserves, and I thought, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then I've always told people you can put out cat's fur, but I've just taken the lazy approach now. They can go direct to him rather than me brushing him and putting it out for the birds.
God, talk about survival of the fittest in your garden.
I think it's just any option for me to be slightly lazier rather than... I've got a full-on schedule of which feeders need to be cleaned each week. So I do my feeders every other week, and it's always group A, which is the apple trees, get cleaned the first Sunday, and then group B, which is the signpost ones, the ones at the back, they get cleaned every other Sunday, the second Sunday, and then bird baths get cleaned the first Monday of every month.
Incredible.
And it's just... I know, I've got a... you can tell I've got OCD. I've got a whiteboard with what gets done when.
It's less that you need to have a structure like that. You can't not.
I know, I would go mad otherwise.
Do you know what? I come from an animal husbandry background in the zoo world, and your garden sounds like how we used to run our zoo.
I was zoo as well. I used to work in aviculture with ducks.
There you go. That's where this comes from.
Yeah.
Now it's starting to add up.
You can tell the zoo background.
Yeah, I can. Do you know what? That's really funny because the way you were talking, I was like, this sounds like a rota more than anything, and this is how we operated with our dens.
But it's just me. No one else helps. It's just
no,
me
you're
doing
on your own. You're everything in the zoo. You're the zookeeper, the payroll, everything.
I know.
Well, Dan, listen, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. It's been wonderful to chat to you and hear about all your tips for garden wildlife. And I'll send people to your Twitter. Are you on Instagram as well?
Yes, so wonderful. I'm very lazy, so the name's the same thing. It's Dan E. Rouse.
Wonderful. So we'll get people onto your social media because the pictures and everything you're putting up are incredible. And I think it's inspiring to see how easy it can be. With the patience to attract the wildlife in the garden. But thank you so much for joining me on today's episode.
No problem, it's been really fun, thank you.
No worries, take care.
Thanks again for tuning in to Into the Wild. If you'd like to keep up to date with the projects and shows that Dan is working on, you can do so on Twitter and Instagram at Dan E. Rouse. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and Twitter and leave us a review. You can also get in touch on social media at Into the Wild Pod. Until next time, keep well, stay safe, and enjoy the good life.